Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Happy Monday and welcome to our broadcast. Oh my God, am I happy. I'm Bill Shanks with Russell Brown. Guess what week it is, Russell Brown?
It's football. First full week of games. Can't wait.
Oh my gosh. This is the best week of the year, isn't it?
It's
kind of cool.
It's up there. It helps when your team's in first place, for sure.
Oh, yes. It does help when your team's in first place. We are at Glory Days on Arkwright Road here in Macon, and we'll be here for the entire show. We could go to, 8:55. Are you in for that?
I don't know if I could make it that far. I'm going to have to have coffee.
Go on the other side of the road. If I'm going to make it watch the game tonight, there's no way I'm going to be able to go till 8:55 on the show. I can tell you that. We are here at the Glory Days where we've got a fun show for you because we have a lot of baseball and a lot of football to talk about, of course, because we are counting down to the start of the full week one of college football season, and we can't wait to talk about that. We'll also look back on what happened last night in the Falcons-Browns game with the appearance of Josh Rosen, and we will have a couple of guests. Jake Rowe, Dogs 247, will be here at 4:20, and then Brent Beard from First Coast News will be here to talk a little college football. We'll take your phone calls around 5 o'clock or so. I tell you, I came for lunch on Saturday, Russ, here at the Glory Days, and I cheated with a little fried food with the chicken fingers. You know, I love these daggum chicken fingers. I mean, not many places that we go to have bad chicken fingers, and this one right there, they have great chicken fingers. I really enjoyed it. Had some onion rings, too, but don't tell anybody. And then I had a salad. That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, no, it's good for you that you mix in the salad. That's good. Even
like
on cheat day.
Yeah, I like the salad. So I had a little fried food on Saturday and came here for the chicken fingers and really, really enjoyed it. They've got, by the way, something you need to pay attention to. They've got a fantasy football draft party package, at-home draft party package for $89.99. You can get the award-winning wings, pork sliders, slam dunk pretzels, sauces, draft kit, everything. $120 in bonus cards, serves 12, all for $89.99. And they've got great items here, of course, for tailgating. If you to take the tailgates, whether you're going to any game, high school or college, or if you're going to the NFL in a couple of weeks to see the Falcons. They've got party platters that you can take, chicken finger platters. They've got it all here at Glory Day, so we hope you'll come by. If you've never been, it's in the old Logan's Roadhouse, one of Russ's favorite restaurants.
Glory Days, yes. Logan's not so
Glory nice. Days here. we hope you'll come by and check it out. A lot of great TVs on the walls, which is really good if you're going to watch sports. They've got great food, too, because you know what? We don't go anywhere where there's bad food. Look at us. The one thing you can't trust are skinny sports talk show hosts who promote food. Not smart.
No.
Don't trust them. Like we had a waiter a minute ago, a very nice guy. He works here, but he would never do good being with us because he's too skinny.
Yeah, well, there's that. But he's hospitality. He's not the cook.
Correct.
I worry about skinny chefs, too.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's right. If they're not skimming off what they're cooking, they're in trouble, right? So, anyway, great food here at Glory Days, and we hope you'll come by and enjoy it. If you've never been, we invite you to come try it out. Very, very good food here. They've got I love that redfish. Did you try the redfish the other day?
No, I ended up – I can't even remember what I ended up getting now. But, no, I passed on the fish because I didn't want to eat that much. I got an appetizer. I can't remember what it was now.
Okay. Well, I love the redfish. I've really enjoyed that. I love the Friday fish fry they have here. So just good food here at Glory Days. All right. Let's talk a little Braves baseball first and foremost. And I tell you, first of all, the game on Friday. My gosh. What a game. That was incredible. On Friday night with the home run by Soler and the catch by Jock Peterson. I love these new players. I know it's probably dangerous to say, well, let's just keep them. But I love these new players. I mean, obviously they've helped the Braves get into first place. But think of the contributions they've had. They've been incredible. And the catch by Jock Peterson was ridiculously good. We know that. And you know, they took two or three from the Giants, and it started on Friday night with a great, great win with a home run by Soler in the seventh inning. They had a really good pitching performance, I thought, from Max, did well. Then they lost on Saturday. Pretty decent pitching performance by Enoa, not bad at all. The Giants just won. They had I don't really know how that Webb kid did what he did, but he's good, and he's had a great year. He's really good, and he was impressive, and he shut the Braves out. And then they came back yesterday with Ian Anderson and did the job and got the series win 2-1 over the best team in baseball. And you know, you can't complain about that. You can complain about the Diamondbacks dropping their lead in the 10th inning the other night on Friday, which would have helped out matters a little bit. But for the most part, you knew that the Phillies would bounce back and do well against one of the worst teams in the sport after they finally won, and then they won easily on Saturday and Sunday. So, look, 2 out of 3 from the Giants, the best team in baseball. I'm not going to complain about that. I'll take it in the series they have coming up here as well. But all in all, I think a good weekend. Did they lose the game? Yep, they did. They're now down to 4.5, 5 in the loss column. I'm fine. Look, it's going to go up and down. We know that. It's not going to just go simply higher because the Phillies aren't going anywhere. The Mets are imploding. We'll talk about that in a moment, which is a fun thing to watch as they're just a dumpster fire. But I think we saw firsthand why the Giants were so good, in spite of their dumb manager. They're just a good baseball team. And you know, obviously they've got Brandon Crawford. They've got Buster Posey. They've got some very, very good players. And Chris Bryant, who before he got hurt was showing how he can contribute to that team as well. So they're good. They're a very good team, and they belong in first place. I can see why they are in first place, mainly because of the pitching. You know, I mean, their pitching has been outstanding all year long, and that kid on Saturday showed us kind of partly why they've been so good. But the Braves did just as well. They won the series. They can win the series in L.A. They can win the series moving forward. They're a good team. They got good pitching. It all starts with pitching. And, I mean, you got guys who are mashers. I mean, the combination now in baseball of good pitching and home run hitters is very, very dangerous. And that's what the Braves had. That's what the weekend was all about. They beat the crap out of them yesterday, which was a lot of fun. And, I think every time the Braves can do something like that against these better teams, it takes note of the other teams that are waiting to see if the Braves can be competitive against these solid teams. Yeah, they can, and they will, and I have no problem worrying about that. I'm not going to lose sleep over that the next 3 nights. Matter of fact, I hope I stay up and be able to watch the game, but I love the weekend. I, you know, 2 out of 3, you can't complain about that. And the way they won, though, that was a great, great pennant race win on Friday night. I've had many, examples of wins in the past that have happened in August and September for this Braves team that kind of show you how important it is for them to have those kind of wins. I mean, it's a momentum thing. Oh, well, you say, well, they turned around and lost 5-0 on Saturday, so the momentum didn't help it on Friday. Bullcrap. It did. It did help them because when they had that kind of game, it does give them a little bit of boost. And then look what happened on Sunday. They went out there. They got the big hits. They got the home runs. They blew them out, and they walked out of that stadium feeling, okay, number one team, best team in baseball, best record in baseball came in here. We beat them 2 out of 3. Let's go on the road, beat those blue bastards in L.A., do what we need to do, and continue to stay afloat. And you know what? As we keep on saying, Russ, every day off that calendar is just as important as what happens in the games because it helps tremendously with the math. And we're dealing with a math issue here. When you get to late August 30th, you're dealing with math when you have a lead, and we'll go over that in a minute. But, I mean, that's why those days off that calendar mean oh so much, and we got 3 more off since we talked on Friday.
Yeah, and, you know, the Phillies did make up a game over the weekend, but if you look at the big picture going back to that series against the Yankees in the last 8 days, they've only made up 1 game in a stretch where you knew the Braves were playing the Yankees, the Giants, and now the Dodgers. So you feel good about that. Like you said, it's more time off that calendar, which only plays to the Braves' favor. So, I mean, I, based on what I saw this weekend, it's like I'm ready. Like, I think this team can go back to the NLCS. I think we can pick up right where we left off with the expectations before the season started. Seeing Ian Anderson back out there looking good yesterday, that was good to see. And Noah, since he's come back, has been Noah. I know they didn't win the game, but
he looked good to me.
He looked good. And they just, you know, you mentioned the guys that they've brought in. I mean, there were Soler and Jock Peterson in the middle of it. It was good to see Rosario in the starting lineup yesterday.
Yep.
I mean, I just feel like this team's ready to get back to those expectations and have them where they were before. And you know, let's see what happens over the course of the next 3 days. But I don't look at this series the way I did 2 weeks ago where it's like, oh, crap, you know, here come the Dodgers. We need to pad that lead over Philadelphia. It's like, let's see if we can take 2 out of 3 on the road.
Absolutely. That's exactly why I feel about it. It's going to be tough. They got tough pitchers going, Urias, and they've got obviously Scherzer, and they've got Bueller. But they lost yesterday 5-0 to Colorado, so they're not perfect either, you know. And the Braves are throwing pretty good pitchers out there themselves. Pitching is the name of the game. There's just no doubt about it. When you come to a pennant race, you've got to have the pitching. You've got to have it work. And listen to this. The Atlanta Braves pitching since the All-Star break, which, by the way, they have a 26-14 record. Their team ERA since the All-Star break is 3.37. Before the All-Star break, it was 4.27. And they were a game below 500, 44-45 at the All-Star break. They're 26-14 since. They're fifth in the ERA since the All-Star break in Major League Baseball out of 30 teams. Fifth. And that explains why their record has been so good since the All-Star break of 26-14. And they were 16th in Major League Baseball before the All-Star break. By the way, the team they're playing tonight, the Dodgers, has the best team ERA in baseball. They had the best before the break at 3.17. They've been even better before the break, or rather, I'm sorry, after the break at 2.76. So if you want to know why the two teams that are playing tonight at 10:10 in Los Angeles at Chavez Ravine are doing as well as they are doing, it's because of one thing, and that's because of the pitching. The Dodgers' pitching is ridiculous. They bring these people out of the blue. I don't know where they are from, but they just bring them out. It's like, who the hell these guys are? And they have great arms. And that's why they were able to beat the Braves last year in the playoffs in the LCS and shut the Braves' great offense down. It's why they were able to win the World Series against Tampa Bay, and it's why they are where they are right now. And, hell, they just added Max Scherzer, which is awfully scary. It's ridiculous. But the Braves have good pitching, too. And look, I absolutely, positively love the pitching the Braves have accumulated here, particularly with the return of Oscar Noah and also now of Ian Anderson, who pitched 5-plus shutout innings of baseball yesterday. All you got to do is go back to last year and look at the difference. I had zero confidence going into last year's postseason for the Atlanta Braves when they won the division. They had no starting pitching. They had no rotation. They had a couple of guys who could start, but they had no rotation. Rotation means you go around the group one time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just throw people out there to try to start like they had to do. And obviously Max Fried and Ian Anderson did a tremendous job in the playoffs of giving them a chance to win each and every time out. But when you have to turn to Bryce Wilson and A.J. Minter in the LCS to try to beat the Dodgers and finish off the Dodgers, you know exactly what you went through. Now we're looking at a situation where they have a tremendous amount of depth. They have basically 6 starters right now. They have to figure out what to do for the rest of the 33 games they have remaining. And they can go into the postseason know that their depth is perhaps the best of any team that's going to be in the postseason. I really believe that. I mean, I know the Dodgers' depth is really good, too. But as far as the quantity of depth, the Braves are right there. And so that's what gave me hope at the All-Star break when they were a game below 500, because you could see Morton and Max Fried come together and start to really be a great duo at the top of that rotation. You knew even with Ian Anderson going down that he would be back and he'd be okay and he'd be part of that mix as well as the third starter. And you know, to see the evolution, if you will, of Touki Toussaint and then the return of Oscar Noah and now Ian Anderson and the emergence of even a Kyle Muller. who's in the mix, is number seven, for crying out loud. He's number seven because Drew Smiley's right in there as well. I mean, I just can't tell you how much it gives me the confidence that this team can compete, whether it's three games in Los Angeles in late August, early September, or in October. And doesn't mean they'll win, but you got to have a chance, and the starting pitching is what will give you a chance. Gave them a chance on Saturday night, even though they were getting shut down by the Webb kid. They had a chance because Enoa held them strong and held them tight. So I love this team. It's a joy to watch this team. I'm going to try like hell to stay up tonight because those of you who are young may not remember when the Braves and Dodgers had some great August games in the early 90s and even going back into the early 80s as well, and tremendous games. I mean, when I was a kid, when I was 12 in 1982, and the Braves would go to Los Angeles three times every year, they would have these West Coast games, and I remember we had a neighbor, and she loved the Braves. She loved Bruce Benedict. She would have died when I had Bruce Benedict on the show last year, although she's already dead, so it wouldn't matter. But she, oh, my God, she loved her some Bruce Benedict. She would come over us and watch the late-night West Coast games. My mom would have to get up and go to work the next day, and her name was Edna. She kind of worked out of her home. She was a seamstress. She would sew stuff. If that's not a Waycross story for you, I don't know what the hell is. She'd come over and watch the game with us at 10:30. And we would open up the doors, you know, because, I mean, we're talking about the early 80s.
Yeah.
We would open up the doors, and it could be hot as hell, but we'd open up the doors. We'd have our front porch, and we'd watch the Braves games, you know, until wee hours of the morning. And it was unbelievable. And I'm going to try to do the same thing. I don't want my neighbors now to come over and watch the game because I don't like them too much. That's not true. I do like some of them. Some of them I don't. But the West Coast games were just unbelievable, you know, because they had that feeling of something special. It was a special event. And only people who were – and I know you were able to see them some in the early 90s and stuff, but even those early 80s games were unbelievable. They were TBS games, you know. Yesterday they were on TBS and – even that was kind of special to see him on WTBS for a change. But I can't wait for tonight, and mainly because we got a chance to beat these blue bastards. Ken from Cumming, and you know what? Ken from Cumming, if you walk in the door right now, I'm going to hit you right in the mouth because he's a Dodger, right?
I'm not Ken. Ken brings gifts.
Well, he is. He does. I'm just kidding. But I can't wait. I mean, it's just that's what pennant race baseball tonight is what it's all about.
It is, and it's fun to kind of have that come off that series win over the Giants too, because I felt like this team was kind of back with the way they've been performing, the trades, the players coming. It's not just Darnold and Anderson and Enoa coming back from injury, but performing up to the standard they had set before coming back from injury. To say that, you know, that guy that was on the roster before is now back, and there's no lingering issue there. And then the fan in me is going to be overly confident in the team. So to see them take two out of three from the San Francisco Giants and say, okay, this isn't just Braves fan Russ getting a little carried away with his team. They really are that good, and they really have reached this point now to where you feel like this team can go out and contend. And again, I know the Giants had the best record, but, I mean, the Dodgers have the best roster. So to me, if you're talking about a seven-game series, this is the team – that's going to be tough to beat because of the depth they have with their pitching and even, you know, the idea that Trey Turner's on this team with Corey Seager's, and it's crazy. But you know what? I don't look at it the way I did before. Before it was like, okay, let's make some moves and win this crappy division. And because you always, you know, it just sends the right message to the clubhouse. It sends the right message that, you know, if there's a chance to win the division, this front office, they're not just going to cash it in. They're going to go for it. And now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, we could beat L.A.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. We're going to take a break, come back, talk more about the Braves, and talk more about winning this division. They have a 4.5 game lead, 5 in the loss column. And we'll also ask the question, what about Marcell Ozuna? I'll give you some thoughts on that I want you to ponder. Then we'll talk Falcons and Browns. Don't turn it. I want you to listen to the show. We'll talk about Josh Rosen. Nothing like a good segment of local radio to talk about backup quarterbacks in the NFL. And we'll also wait on the waiver wire for the Falcons to sign their secondary. We'll do that. Then college football talk. Kirby Smart had some things to say today. Tennessee has a new starting quarterback. Oh, my gosh, that's a headline grabber. And then we'll have our two guests, Jake Rowe, Dogs 247, and then Brent Beard from First Coast News. Then we'll take your phone calls around 5 o'clock. We're at Glory Days Grill here on Arkwright Road in Macon, where we invite you to come. And great food here. The 1988 sirloin is something else I've had recently. That was very good. I want to get the comeback chicken, the fire-grilled chicken topped with feta cheese, sun-dried tomatoes, basil lemons, butter sauce, and served with steamed broccoli and choice of side. I'll give Russ my broccoli, but it sounds really good. And the pan-seared redfish is great. And don't forget about the fabulous fish fry on Friday here at Glory Days. With Russ Brown, I'm Bill Shanks. You are listening to The Bill Shanks Show. Back on our broadcast from Glory Days Grill here on Arkwright Road in Macon. Little Charlie Daniels to bring us back. We are talking a little Braves baseball. And, all right, Russ, I know we love math.
But yes.
But, you know, when I get bored on the weekends and decide to put stuff down on paper, we got to pay attention to it.
Yes.
And not that it needs to be verified, because why waste time? Let's just go with it, right? The Braves are 4.5 up on Philadelphia. Fighting Fields from Philadelphia are 5 back in the loss column. They've won 3 in a row, however. They will host Washington tonight. But I just saw, Russ, where, all right, the Nationals have Josiah Gray coming. He's pitching for the Nationals. And they're bringing up that catcher who they also got in the deal with the Dodgers from L.A. for Scherzer and Turner. He's coming up to make his big league debut and catch Gray tonight. And his name is Keibert Ruiz. Very good prospect, one of the top catching prospects in the game. And so he's coming up to be in Washington's lineup, which maybe will give them a little bit of help. And remember, Wheeler got beat bad last week it was the Rays, right? The Rays are the one who beat him.
Yep.
Gave up 7 runs, if I remember correctly, in that game to Tampa Bay. Zach Wheeler's 10-9 with a 2.90. Gray 0-1 with a 3.75. Then tomorrow, the Mets will get back in action. And the Mets are a dumpster fire. I mean, it's like burning uncontrollably. It's like the eternal flame. It won't go out because they're a dumpster fire, and I absolutely positively love it. I'm not talking to my good friend Mark Healy right now, because I don't want him to call me any names, but you know what? I love for them to crash and burn. It's the joy of my life, and that's exactly what they're doing. Marcus Stroman will pitch them tomorrow in their first game, the completion of a suspended game from April the 11th against Miami. And then at 7:10 tomorrow night, it'll be Trevor Williams against Miami. So they got 2 games tomorrow in New York against the Marlins. Tomorrow, then, Matt Moore will pitch for Philadelphia against Patrick Corbin, who's had a horrible year for the Nationals. Wednesday, then, both teams play. Philadelphia at Washington, Miami at New York. And then on Thursday, Miami will take on New York again with Rich Hill on the mound for the Mets. So, obviously, the Braves are playing the Dodgers, and the pitching matchup for this series is ridiculous. Drew Smiley tonight against Julio Urias, who's 14-3 with a 3.17 ERA coming off the injury list. Tomorrow night, Charlie Morton, he's 12-5 with a 3.60 ERA against Walker Buehler. If you're going to stay up for any game and watch it or listen to it on the superstations, let it be tomorrow night. Charlie Morton versus Walker Buehler. That's one that even you and I might pay a lot of money to go see. That's a hell of a matchup right there. Buehler 13-2 with a 2.02. He's due to lose, you know. And I think it's going to happen tomorrow night. Wednesday, Max Fried against Max Scherzer, a battle of the Maxes. Scherzer, you know, he's losing it. He's getting old. Max is the future of the sport. Let's just be honest.
That sounds good to me.
You like that? 11-7 is Max's record. Fried, 3.54. Scherzer, 12-4 with a 2.51. I'm kidding about that, sucker. So, you know, the next 4 days are going to be important. Then the Braves move on and play Colorado starting on Thursday. Colorado, a very good home team. All right, Russ, here's the math. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Braves have 33 games left. The Phillies and the Mets have 32 games left. If the Braves go 17-6, they'll finish 87-75. The Phillies would have to go 22-10 to finish 88-74 and beat the Braves. The Mets would have to go 25-7 to finish 88-74 to beat Atlanta. Now, if the Braves go 20-13 in their final 33 games, they'll finish 90-72. That's my personal goal, because I think if they win 90 games with this team and everything that's happened to this team, if Brian Snicker doesn't get a lifetime contract, I'm going to boycott. My God, for this team to win 90 games would be unbelievable. The Phillies, Russ, would have to go 25-7 to beat Atlanta if the Braves go 20-13. That would put them at 91-71. The Mets would have to go 28-4. That ain't happening. So, I mean, even one game over 500, the Mets have to play ridiculously good. They're dead. They're done. But, you know, you look at what the Phillies have to do, and even going 18-5, if the Braves go 18-5, the Phillies have to go 23-9. If the Braves go 19-14, they'll finish with 89 wins. The Phillies would have to go 24-8 to beat Atlanta. So it's looking good. Now, all that being said, if the Braves lose 5 in a row and the Phillies win 5 in a row, guess what happens? The Phillies are tied in the loss column and have a half-game lead on Atlanta. So you don't want that to happen. You don't want anything catastrophic to happen. You don't want for a losing streak to happen. But that's where the starting pitching comes into play. The Phillies and the Mets both had starting pitching issues, which have caused them to have some tough stretches along the way in the last couple of weeks. The Braves don't have that. The Braves have so many starting pitchers, they don't know what to do with them. So therefore, and I'm not saying they're going to have a 20-13 record. That may be pushing it. But I think they can go 18-15. That's 3 games over 500. Yeah. This is a team that's 12 games over 500 in the last 40 games. So, you know what? Do your job. Don't worry about them. Win series, particularly against teams you're supposed to win series against. And you know what? It may still come down those final 6 games of the season when Philadelphia comes in for 3 and New York for 3. Bring them on. I'll be fine, because you know where it's at? Truist Park, Atlanta, GA.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, they've got to get to those series first. I mean, the Mets aren't. They're done.
They're dead.
The Phillies still have a fighting chance, but, you know, they need to make up that ground now in this series against the Nationals while the Braves are playing the Dodgers. But then again, if the Braves go out and take 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, I mean, I'm going to start engraving names on the trophy, because Philadelphia, this pennant race should be closer. They got swept by the Diamondbacks, and I think not this weekend, they took 3 out of 4, but prior to that, when they got swept, that's 2 games that they just gave away, basically. Mm-hmm. And you know, to me, there's a big difference between a 4.5-game lead and a 2.5-game lead, and we'll see what it looks like after the series with the Los Angeles Dodgers. But, you know, the calendar's getting ready to flip to September, and, you know, you start getting into September with a 5-game lead, you're in pretty good shape. So the pressure's going to start mounting on Philadelphia. We'll see how they deal with that. I thought they did good to bounce back and win 3 over the weekend from the Diamondbacks after losing to them on Thursday, mm-hmm. which was their 4th loss in a row to Arizona. But and the other thing, too, as we've touched on this before, but I think it's worth repeating, the Atlanta Braves, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the New York Mets, for the most of the season, were just mediocre teams all thrust in the same division together. And at the trade deadline, the Atlanta Braves got better, and the other two just kind of stayed mediocre.
And the starting pitching is at the forefront of that. Well, what we saw from Oscar Noah on Saturday, and then Ian Anderson both of them there, Noah on Saturday and Anderson on Sunday, is a remarkable testament into what this team is all about right now. It's all about starting pitching. And I mean, you think about the fact they've got 4 legit starters for a playoff game. Sorry, Alex, I'm not going to throw Drew Smiley out there like you thought about last year. But you know what? I think anybody in the world is going to be confident with Max, with Charlie, with Oscar, and with Ian in a playoff series. And, you know, it may not be Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz and Millwood, but it's pretty damn good. And it beats the crap out of what they had last year. We had no idea who's going to pitch the 3rd game of a series. And they wound up going with A.J. Minter in Game 5. Oh, we got to go clinch the world's the pennant. They're going to have A.J. Minter out there. I mean, God bless him. He did well. It wasn't his fault they lost the game. But, I mean, that wasn't who you want to have out there when you tried to clinch the pennant. you want one of those four that I just mentioned. So it's night and day difference. And, oh, by the way, the offense is ridiculous. Austin Riley is an MVP candidate. And yes, Jeremy from Memphis is going to remind me on a regular basis that I would have traded him for Nolan Arenado back in the winter. Everybody breathing would have probably traded him for Nolan Arenado in the winter because I think Nolan Arenado is still a great player, but Austin's my boy. I've always loved Austin Riley, and I'm thrilled that he's doing this. Am I surprised he's doing it? Yeah, to this level, because he's an MVP candidate. I knew the kid was going to be good. I had no question. We talked to him in Rome, in 2016? Mm-hmm. You know, I saw him the first time he was at spring training, first day he was at spring training. Sure, this kid had everything you'd want. Physically, he had it. He had the mentality that he had. He had everything. And he had the skill, and he's only gotten better. But this is ridiculous. He's third in the National League in home runs with 28, fourth in the National League in batting average with a .304 or more, sixth in slugging percentage at .539, seventh in RBI with 80, eighth in OPS at .915, 10th in on-base percentage at .376. And if he keeps this up for another 33 days, he's going to be in the conversation. Is he the favorite? Probably not. But does he have a chance to get a lot of votes of the MVP award? You daggum right he does, and nobody really would have thought of that. He's hitting .301 at home this season with 12 home runs, 44 RBI. In August, Austin Riley's hitting .364. Since July 1st, he's hitting .339. In his last 50 games, Austin Riley, since July 1st, is hitting .339 with 15 home runs and 43 RBI, and that's why he has a great chance to get a lot of love when it comes to the MVP discussion. So we know how well these new players have done for Atlanta. Combination of Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, Adam Duvall, and Eddie Rosario have combined for 17 home runs, 52 RBI, and 306 at-bats. .346 OBP, batting average a little low because Duvall always has a low batting average. .245 for the combined four. But .346 OBP, 17 home runs, and 52 RBI. You compare that to what Guillermo Heredia and Abraham Almonte had as starters, .227 batting average, .332 OBP, 8 home runs, 37 RBI, and 392 at-bats. How many times do we go on the show and see the lineup and go, oh, my God, they've got 4.5 legit hitters in this lineup tonight for Brian Snicker? Now it's totally different with these guys, even Rosario, who was great yesterday. And you know what, Soler, I told someone over the weekend, I said, you know what, I don't know what the deal is with the Zuna. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want Jorge Soler back next year. I don't care. Right field, I know we got a Acuna kid. He's supposed to come back next year. He's pretty good, I hear. But, my God, Soler. I mean, he's a masher. The kid can hit. I mean, he's really good. Yeah. And he's 30, so I think he's worth bringing back.
I think so. And, sometimes the batting average for him can be low, but that's all right. He's, like you said, he's a masher. He hits a ton of home runs, and he doesn't – they're not bad at bats. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like he battles in there. So, he's fun to watch.
I mean,
he is that is somebody. That's the type of player I would want up and down the order. Is that there's no? I mean, again, he may bat .210, but he's going to hit 35 home runs and he's going to be a tough out
for the Atlanta Braves in his first 92 at bats since he was acquired from Kansas City. Jorge Soler is hitting .283, .396 on base percentage, 7 home runs, 15 RBI, 18 walks. Now, that might help because of who's hitting behind him, right? Freddie Freeman. Well, okay. I'll take it. Because if Jorge Soler is going to hit .283 with a .396 OBP, he's going to be an MVP candidate if he plays 162 games. This kid can mash. I mean, he led the American League in home runs a couple of years ago. He's really, really good. And last night after watching him again help the Braves win yesterday, it made me think, all right, what's going on with Marcell Ozuna? Now, you may say, well, why don't you ask the Braves, dummy? The Braves can't say anything. We know that. It's like, why didn't you ask Alex Anthopoulos when you had him on your show about Marcell Ozuna? Because he's going to waste my breath and waste time and say, I can't talk about that. So why ask him? But I want to ask this question. What's going on with Marcell Ozuna? Marcell Ozuna, fractured his middle and left ring finger on Tuesday, May 25th. He was expected to miss 5 or 6 weeks. 6 weeks would have been July 6th. Tomorrow, August 31st, will be 14 weeks since the injury. So why the delay? Now, we assumed that if he did, for example, get back on July the 6th, considering the fact that he obviously was arrested a few days after he was injured, that he would immediately be suspended and that would start the suspension clock, all right, for however long it was going to be, 30 days, 60 days, a year, whatever, that he would get back from his injury and immediately be suspended. 14 weeks. So my question is, what's the problem? He's been out 3 months and 5 days. Not 6 weeks, 14 weeks. And remember, he was hitting .213 with 7 home runs, 26 RBI, and 188 bats before his injury. But last year, he was MVP candidate, 6th in the MVP voting, as a matter of fact. .338 batting average, .431 OBP, 18 home runs, and 56 RBI, and only 228 at-bats. But where is this guy? And there's nobody we can ask. Again, Brian Snitker can't say anything. Alex Anthopoulos can't say anything. They've both been instructed to not say anything by Major League Baseball. But, I mean, it's a fair question. We're talking about kind of a calendar issue here. We think the report's correct. It came out a little while ago about the fact they're going to turn those felonies into a misdemeanor. But you can't tell me this guy's still having a problem with his fingers when they said originally he was going to be out 6 weeks and it's been 14. Now, I'm not saying he's going to appear next week in Atlanta in the game, but it does kind of make you wonder what's the deal here, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, has he found a loophole? And in other words, has he found a way to continue to get paid? And then as the investigation unfolds, if the charges are reduced and that lessens the possibility or at least the severity of a suspension, that's more money for Marcell Ozuna. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but
– makes you wonder.
I mean, if it takes 6 weeks to heal and it's been 14 weeks, I mean, I think.
It's a red flag, though, don't you think?
Oh, well, something's yeah, Marcell Ozuna himself. I mean, beating your wife's a red flag, so yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the calendar. Yeah. You know, there's just something that doesn't add up there with that.
Yeah. There's a lot. And that's kind of what I'm getting at. There's a lot with him that doesn't add up. I mean, people are saying, is there a chance he could be back? I don't know that I want this guy back.
I don't either, but. I just find it curious that we're here in the end of August and it's been 3 full months.
Mm-hmm.
And no word. But it would have been very easy for Major League Baseball. They could have suspended him when he's on the injured list. I don't know why that couldn't have happened. They haven't. Is that a good sign?
Oh, they can suspend him when he's on the injured list.
I think they can.
Oh, okay.
I think they can.
Well, then, yeah, that makes zero sense.
But even if not, wouldn't there be questions even from the Braves side of why are you extending your stay on the injured list and forcing us to pay you when you are ready to go? You can't tell me he's not ready to hit after 14 weeks unless there's been a setback with his fingers. And if that's the case, tell us.
Right.
Tell us. But for it to be silence, I mean, it just makes you wonder. And look, I'm kind of with you. That's why I was kind of going from Soler to Ozuna. I don't give a damn if he's back or not. I kind of like Soler. But you know what? If he comes back, my God, how much better does that make this Braves team? And I want to win the World Series. While I sell my soul with even someone who's probably not the best human being in the world? Maybe. You know, it's been 25 damn years. I may do a lot of things. But, you know, it's like it just doesn't make any sense to me why he's still out and there's been complete silence. You would think if they were – ready to suspend him, they would have said, all right, get off the injured list right now, if that was a problem, which I just don't know if it is or not. So it makes me wonder that those charges being reduced may have an impact on what's going on now. But we'll see. But again, there's a big difference between 14 weeks and 6 weeks. And if you've got two broken fingers that you can't get rehabbed in 3 months, something's going on. We'll take a break and come back. We're at Glory Days Grill here on Arkwright Road in Macon. We will talk a little NFL football. Look back on last night with the Falcons and the Browns and Josh Rosen. All that and more right after this. 13 minutes before the top of the hour. Just enough time for us to talk about the Falcons. How much did you watch last night?
not much. It was, I had it on with Wes and Arch in the background, but I wasn't really focused on things. Okay. Future Hall of Famer Kyle Pitts made a big catch, and
early on, he was a beast.
That was I was satisfied at that.
That was nice to see, though.
Yes,
not that we needed to see that to believe what we already believe. We know that he's going to be a really good player. Matt Ryan did not play. I guess it doesn't matter anymore for a quarterback to play with a new center. By the way, center, did you see the video of the Dahlman kid getting pushed back by the defensive tackle for the Browns?
No, I did not see that.
You don't want to see it.
Okay.
I mean, there's no football equivalent of what you could describe to see how bad Drew Dahlman got beat last night by the Browns defensive tackle. I've never seen anything like it before. Who's the best defensive tackle in the history of the sport? Warren Sapp.
He's a good one.
Let's say that.
It's a good place to start. We'll go
all
with
right.
that.
Warren Sapp going up against a junior high school kid from Windsor.
Well, that might be illegal, actually. Yeah.
I'm going to find you the video. With all due respect to Windsor, I'm telling you, it was rough. It was awful. And yeah, I know it's just one game. He's a kid, but we don't need to see any offensive linemen to get abused by the opponents to give us any kind of good, warm, fuzzy feelings about the Falcons, of which I have none, by the way. I don't know how the other players did. Matt Hennessy on the offensive line of scrimmage. There was nothing to see. And I didn't sit down and watch it from start to finish. I mean, I'm not that big of a loser. But, I mean, what I saw was, like, rough. And, again, they didn't have all their players out there. It's not a true representation of what the Falcons are going to be. But have we seen anything, heard anything, read anything that gives us any good feeling about what we're going to see when the bell rings in 2 weeks?
I think there'll be – this is not – I don't know if it translates to wins and losses per se, but there'll be a better coach team.
Well, hell, that wouldn't take much.
I don't know. But, I mean, I don't think you'll see five guys standing around staring at a ball on an onside kick. I think one of them, at least one, maybe two, might jump on it. But, no, I think you're going to see a more disciplined team. But I also feel like you took over a situation where a coach was trying to be everybody's buddy, and there were players taking advantage of that. So you've almost got to take a year to weed that stuff out.
No doubt.
And that's this year. So it's just going to be tough, but a necessary step.
I'm anxious to see the process between now and is it 4 o'clock tomorrow when the rosters are?
I think so, yeah.
I've not seen any player moves from Atlanta. So they're coming. And I'm really anxious to see if a player like an Isaiah Oliver is going to be retained by the current administration. He's a player who was drafted by the previous administration and just hadn't worked out. I mean, he got beat last night. I was listening to Wes early on in the game, and it was like, uh-oh, Isaiah Oliver. And I'm like, here we go, you know. And I'm anxious to see that between now and when the rosters are somewhat set. And you know why they haven't released their information? Because as D. Orlando Ledbetter told us on Friday and has been telling us for months, waiver wire is going to be the most important two words in the Atlanta Falcons history, vocabulary this year. And I think that's what they're doing. They're just waiting for that waiver wire.
Waiting on that starting safety to get cut by somebody else so they can scoop him up.
I know it. Every time I've seen safety or cornerback cut, I've Googled him to see how many games started he played it as a starter last year. Haven't seen any yet. I've seen guys who were like, you know, safety / special teamers, that kind of stuff. But yeah. I have not seen any significant player who would be able to come in and really make a difference. Not that, look, I mean, again, you're talking about signing someone who's been cut. So, all right, how good is that, you know? Maybe there's as much of a work issue in the NFL as there is in, like, restaurants. At least for the Falcons.
No, finding good people to use
on their team.
I think the NFL pays a little bit better.
Well, that's true. That is true. You won't have to worry about that too much. But, I mean, I just don't know what to expect. But last night, nothing special. No Matt Ryan. We'll see how this works out, Russ. We'll see. I don't even know. I don't even know what to say about it. Do you?
No, I don't like it. I'm just – and maybe I'm just old-fashioned in that way. But I didn't watch – I couldn't watch the first preseason game. Still not sure what was going on with that. And then, so I turned on the second one in Miami, and A.J. McCarron was starting, so I turned it off. And then last night I turned it on, and then when I saw that Matt Ryan wasn't going to play, I was going to turn it off. But once the game got going, I was like, well, I'll watch a little bit of this because, you know, Kyle Pitts was in there. I didn't want to miss that. But I just – I mean, if it works, it works. But it's just – you know, the right answer on how to deal with the three preseason games is going to be answered by who wins the Super Bowl because it's a copycat league. Yep. So whoever wins the Super Bowl, everybody else is going to say, well, we got to do just what – we got to do it exactly like they did it.
No doubt. You know why Matt Ryan probably didn't play last night? Google that video for Drew Dahlman and you'll probably see.
Well, there's that, yeah.
I mean, you really think about – all right, Baker played last night, right? Baker, mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield played. Cleveland's a much further along team than the Atlanta Falcons, much closer to a Super Bowl. Never thought I'd say that. They are. They got a very good team. They got some good talent. They got a good defense. And they wanted to see Baker out there a little bit. He didn't play much, but, I mean, he played somewhat in the first half. Russ, you just can't, until you figure that offensive line, unless you have to, I think that's the reason. I hate to say that because it's embarrassing, and it, again, defines why this team is going to be what it will be this year, which is mediocre at best. That's being kind now. Using that word with the Falcons, I think this year is going to be a stretch. You can't be very good if you got a secondary that's going to be leaky and an offensive lineman that may put your quarterback in a death knell. I mean, it's just scary. So I think that's what it comes down to. I'm with you. I think it's a mistake, but I don't think he wanted to get him hurt, and therefore you can't blame him if he has that much concern about the offensive line. And, again, go Google Drew Dahlman getting abused, and you'll see why he probably has that feeling. We're at Glory Days here on Arkwright Road in Macon. Plenty of TVs, great place to come watch the games and enjoy yourself, and get great food here at Glory Days Grill on Arkwright Road in Macon. You are listening to The Bill Shank Show.